Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 130. We are covering the Safeway Open on the PGA Tour, plus the Portugal Masters on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour preview at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have Golf Betting System's European Tour expert, Paul Williams, and podcast pundit, Barry O'Hanrahan. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Please visit Golf Betting System with betting previews containing tips, masses of tournament statistics and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. Now, you can follow us on Twitter. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting and I am at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. I've just released my Safeway Open Golf Betting Show literally 15 minutes ago. So go and consume that on the Steve Bamford YouTube channel. Take time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That is the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers continually upwards. I know that we had a good haul again last week. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them at the start at the next week's show. Now, I've got a couple here. We've actually got a backlog of reviews because we're getting so many, but I'll read out a couple for you. This one is entitled Midwest USA Regular Listener. He's given us 5 stars. My favourite! Better course descriptions than the Golf Channel. My final stop for info so I can outgame the bubble hats! Mark, we can handle the cold just fine here in the Midwest. That is from Steve Arbogast, and he is in the United States of America. I don't really understand a lot of that. Bubble hats. What's a bubble hat? Steve, can you come back to us and explain what a bubble hat is?
Is that like the equivalent of a sheep that we call,
bubble hats. We can handle the cold just fine here in the Midwest. Yes. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe we've just been talking about a tournament where it was fairly cold compared to the rest of it. I don't know. Anyway. Thank you, Steve, for your 5-star review. And then second review of the week. Great podcast! 5 stars. Brilliant entertainment, tips and all-round knowledge from the lads. Just backed. I've got to say this bit's funny. I've just backed Ryan Palmer at 175-1 for the US PGA Championship. And then he puts in capitals, brilliant insider knowledge, That is from NPSC via Apple Podcasts, who's in Great Britain. 175-1 on Ryan Palmer for the US PGA.
Did you put up Palmer? Is it your fault?
Palmer, he's in my never back again bucket. You should know that. Back him ever again.
Yeah, that may have been the week before that you delved back in on Ryan.
Really?
It organised.
He was mentioned at some stage by one of you idiots.
Steve.
He's had a good season. Top 30 at the FedEx Cup.
Yeah, it's fine, but he's never going to win.
He's not going to win.
I think going back, we talked about Ryan Palmer as one of these players who statistically fit everything that we were looking for. If he was going to finish in the top 10, which was what the objective was with the each way places, it needed to be a backdoor top 10. Because that's how he does it, isn't it? We've seen it with Ryan Palmer. If he's right up there, he's in the lead, he's one behind, he's in the final.
Shoots 80.
If he's sitting in 23rd position, he can go out there and shoot a 63 and suddenly he finishes up in 5th place and you think, well done. Take the money and run.
I mean, the good news is I think the losing bets on Ryan Palmer can be written off as a tax deduction because there's got to be some loophole there.
Just to let you know, Ryan Palmer finished 43rd at the PGA. He started with a 74. He was 128th after day one. 44th, 75th, and he landed 43rd. And he shot a closing 64, but the trouble was he was literally at the bottom of the field when he shot that closing 60.
So it was the right round in the wrong circumstances.
You got it. That actually segues us onto the Tour Championship. In a way, in a perverse kind of way, I would love to see Ryan Palmer with a 10-shot minus 10 at the start of a tournament and just see what would happen and how quickly that 10-under would become 3-under.
You might get a slightly different looking market to that which we saw last week at the top of the outright market.
Let's talk Tour Championship. And then we'll talk Tour Championship. We'll talk a little bit of Martin Kaymer and his continual headbanging. And then, of course, we can just talk a little bit about, and this is what most people are really listening for this week, is the US Open, which, of course, is next week. Winning prices last week, DJ won the overall market where everything was taken into account. 15-8 favourite, naturally. The places in that particular market, JT 6-1, Xander 28-1, John Rahm 3-1, Scotty Scheffler 100-1. If you had backed him five places with Bet, was it Betfred that were five places? And William Hill five places? You're picking up a nice 20-1 each way return on Scotty Scheffler last week in the overall market. And then with the with a level leaderboard, Xander won at 15-under. They always shoot 15-under, the winner of the Tour Championship. Not that he was the winner, but you get my logic. Xander was 12-1. So your strategy pool of backing him at 28s, if you'd have backed him each way, would have been far better from an each way perspective. But clearly Xander then wins at 12-1. The places in that market, Scheffler was second at 28-1. That guy, some player. JT 10-1, DJ 11-2, Tyrrell Hatton got the last each way spot. If you had backed them five places each way, 33-1. That was the Tour Championship.
Playing some good stuff, Tyrrell, wasn't he? Got to say, he's stepped up a level over the last few months.
What's his shot shape? Is he a draw or a fader, or is he just bang straight?
No, he's not straight by any stretch. I think you can put it both ways. I would say, in terms of his natural shape, he's got a bit more of a draw than a fade. But with Tyrrell, I think it's more down to his mentality. He's a very good mid-range putter, Tyrrell. And when he's playing well, when everything's good in Tyrrell's world, he nails a lot of those types of putts. And I think that makes him good on tougher tracks. I think that makes him good in situations where you're going to have to make a 10, 15, a 20-footer for par every now and again. And that just gives him a lot of confidence. Of course, when he's playing really well, that spills over into the resort-style tracks and he's well capable of shooting a 20-under. Yeah, you know, we've seen him do it a few times. But yeah, with Tyrrell, I think it's more how he's feeling himself, and he should be feeling really good because he's been playing, rubbing shoulders with some really top players over the last few months and getting some top results as well. Whether that's something that he can take forward into the really big events, the major championships over the next, next week, as you say, in the Masters, I don't know, a bit more arguable for me, but it's that's some good stuff.
Tyrrell to me seems kind of like a binary player. He's either on or he's not. There's none of this teasing you about, you know, maybe getting into form. He either just comes in and just hits the ground running or whatever, you just forget the week immediately. There's no teasing her, I guess. I could be completely wrong on that. It just feels that way. Like when he's hot, he's really hot, and when he's not, you know, you don't even think about him.
Yeah, I think that's an extension of what I said really, Barry, because I think it's down to how he's, you know, is he in the right positive frame of mind? Because if he is, then he's very competitive. If he's not, then he can be very uncompetitive. Clearly in a competitive and positive frame of mind right now, Mr. Hatton.
I think he really bought into the PGA Tour project this year as well, didn't he? Circumstances are circumstances, but he's now a PGA Tour professional. You know, well established in the States. Everyone knows him out there. He's clearly got a US base, and he's, you know, he can mix it on in the very biggest tournaments. We've always seen that with him. You know, you go back to like the PGA Championship that Jimmy Walker won. You know, Tyrrell Hatton was in there in the top 10 finish. You know, and that's when he was a European Tour regular. Very, very, very rarely visited the United States. I mean, that shows real talent. But yeah. Good player, Tyrrell Hatton. I think he's certainly worthy of note for next week's US Open. What did we just think of the Tour Championship quickly? my... I had it kind of surrounded, and then they all just went backwards on Monday, so it was another full loss at the Tour Championship for me. I'm used to them. It happens every year.
Yeah.
Although one thing I will say, if you just look at FedEx Cup ranks, and we're looking at the rank here for the tournament with no strokes at the start, Rory McIlroy, year one, he was fifth in the FedEx Cup, so he started at 5 under, and then Sander started at 3 under this year. He was at 14th. So if we're looking at that market next year, you want players. You don't want players anywhere near the top of that FedEx Cup ranking.
Well, no,
with all of that pressure.
They're kind of playing more conservative and defensive golf, aren't they? Someone who's got to go out there and kind of relish that opportunity to go out there and really compile a score that's going to contend is the one potentially who's going to top that without market. I thought Sander did really well. I think that's the kind of event that really does wet his whistle, because it's a track that he clearly really enjoys, and it's a scenario where he's trying to beat the best in the game, and he came close enough to really give himself a stab, didn't he, on Sunday? We were just saying off air. It was that pivotal hole where him and DJ left themselves 20 foot or thereabouts for par. I forget which one it was, 12 or 13, something like that. Xander missed and DJ made, and had that gone the other way around, you'd have been within one stroke with half a dozen or so holes left. And you know, at that point, Xander had the momentum and potentially could have gone on to win it. But such are the fine margins in this game. It wasn't to be. But DJ, you know, over the last four events or so, he's been playing some immaculate stuff, hasn't he? Very worthy winner, in my view. Very worthy world number one right now.
Yeah.
In my view.
Couldn't agree more.
We should have made more money off him the last few weeks, but we're all idiots. He's been absolutely sensational. Even he had that little wobble yesterday, back-to-back bogeys. He then rolls in like a 7-8 footer just to stop the bleeding. Yeah. And he just seems to be able to get over these speed bumps with like no issues, you know, and just gets back on it. Amazing. I mean, Thomas and Xander made two good, you know, and Ram made good runs at him, but just couldn't make that connection to him at the top. So it's a tough course to kind of make that fun, I guess, close that gap when you are chasing.
It's not the kind of track where you can go out and rattle off birdie after birdie and suddenly in the shape, you know, in the space of nine holes and made up six shots. It's, you know, it's extremely rare to be able to put together that kind of run at East Lake, because it's not that kind of track. It is a proper technical test. So, I enjoyed it overall, I must say. I enjoyed it more than I thought I'd enjoy it. I far prefer full field events. I prefer bigger tests or bigger odds that you can pluck from further down the list. Looking at the start of that week and the market that we were presented with, I know it was a challenge for you to try and work out a way to play it.
I can't stand it.
You know, from a punting perspective, it's the same dilemma. You know,
I always start the week thinking, do you know what? I might only just put one up this week and be done with it. And then it's just like, you know, just go for one, 4 points win or whatever the bet is, and just do it, leave it, go and do something different.
Yeah.
But then it just, I could fit him in, and then he could fit him in if you go win only. And in the end, you cost yourself a fortune.
Yeah.
And it's on a 30-man field.
Yeah. It's just you live and learn. You live and learn. So, from a personal perspective, trying to work out how best to play it last week, and you look at the fact that after a round, and once the play actually starts, if the guy at the top makes a bogey or a double bogey, a couple of the guys who are further down have already started well and two or three under through five or six holes. Suddenly the leaderboard, suddenly that's those starting positions have an entirely different complexion on them, and the odds that you get presented with from those players a little further down the list can be quickly made to look quite false. So,
you'd have looked at that last week on Dustin Johnson, never ever, or you know, no FedEx Cup number one rank has ever won the final, because they hadn't before Dustin did it yesterday. You think, I can't have that 15 to 8. I might back him. Might just back him for that bit of extra value in the no, in the, you know, in the no strokes market. Get 11 to 2. Well, that'd have missed because clearly Xander won. It's just all over the... I struggle with it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Let's not talk about it. Let's talk about Martin Keimer and John Catlin, shall we, at Valderrama. Yeah. Now, John Catlin, last time he made any waves to me was when they played the tournament just up the road from me here at Hanbury Manor, and he decided he was going to go for an Indian down in Ware, my local town, and he would break out of the bubble.
Yes.
And he couldn't play the tournament. And then next couple of weeks later, lo and behold, he goes and wins at Valderrama, of all places. And I didn't realise he's a bit of a winning machine in lower sort of tours, isn't he? He's won plenty of tournaments, John Catlin.
Yeah, and he's rubbed shoulders with some of the top players over the course of the years. Certainly, as a result of some of those events that he's won, he was entered, I think it was the CIMB Classic a couple of years back he played in. He did reasonably well, I think top 20 or top 25 there or thereabouts. And he's a better player than the kind of events that he's been playing in. I put him up at the Euram Bank Open for that very reason. He didn't do much. I think he finished mid-40s, somewhere there or thereabouts. But it was clearly enough to give me a bit of confidence that he could play well in this kind of company. But I wasn't close to him last week, I must say. He's an accurate player. He's a very good scrambler. He got some good scrambling stats pre the event. He had some good sand save stats pre the event. But he wasn't part of my final shortlist, 125-1. But having hit the front, he just about did enough to hang about. I mean, that final round, 75, no birdies in his final round, four over, and still managed to just about claw over the line. When, as you say, Martin Keimer, again, another golden opportunity to win a golf tournament, another one slips through his fingers.
What price is he going to win at when he does finally win? It's going to be like 8-1, 7-1, 6-1 price, isn't it, Keimer?
Yeah. He's getting into that kind of Matt Kuchar range, isn't it? Where you're just continually banging on the door and you get to a point where you say, well, I just cannot back him because he's far too short. And you know damn well he's going to win eventually. But
Keimer's in the US Open field. Could you see anything? You know, he's clearly playing some great golf. You see him going well at Wingfoot next week?
He's playing some great golf, except when it gets to the very business end of the tournament. He was very down. I don't know if you saw his comment on his either Facebook or Twitter after the end, where he talked again about the final two holes and how disappointed he was in how he played them and how it all transpired at the end. And that's the point. It's this kind of final mental hurdle for him to overcome. He's got to find a way just to scrub any of those skeletons that are in the closet, or those memories or the feelings that he's getting that are stopping him from converting his opportunities, because he's far too good a player for that. He should be taking these events and winning multiple times over the last 2 weeks particularly.
Winning is very hard.
It is, yeah.
It's so hard. Look, and I think we keep talking about it, and you'd like to think it doesn't affect him, but that when he coughed up that huge lead in Abu Dhabi, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that's a kind of scar that just sits with you for seems like forever, maybe. But the more times he puts himself in this situation, the more he's going to get, I don't know, used to those bad feelings he's getting, and I mean, you hope he can just pluck one of these off and get that monkey off the back and remove all those demons, and it might set him free again. I don't know, for me, he's a very likable guy, so you see somebody like that, somebody who you like, struggle, you kind of, I guess it hits you in the feels a little bit more than it would somebody else. I don't know, is the US Open too big a stage to kind of break that duck?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I don't know. I thought the final few holes, I thought that was the way that Martin was going to convert that opportunity. I thought he would win that last week, because it wasn't the kind of event where you needed to go out and shoot the birdies in the final few holes to win the tournament. It was just a case of hanging on. Catlin was, I wouldn't say he was wobbling, but he was nervous. He admitted that he was very nervous after the event.
You could see that.
Yeah.
But he grinded it out, didn't he? I mean, it was blowing a hooly, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it was tough all week, you know. Mm. You don't need much of a wind around Valderrama to make it a tough track. But when it's blowing 15, 20 and you're getting the odd gust of 25, 30, it's a
terrifying.
I'd love to get a PGA Tour event there. Just watch some of these PGA Tour boys miss the cut there at 15 over in the wind. Wow.
I enjoyed it as a spectacle. I didn't enjoy it as a betting event. I had 4 out of my 5 make it through to the weekend, but such was the scoring that when you're starting the weekend at 6, 7, 8 over par, I guess a lot of these guys are already mentally broken in that respect. So desperate just to get away.
For reference, Martin Kaymer is 125-1 with a couple of firms for the US Open next week. That is the same price as Bubba Watson. Well, I know who I'd take at the US Open. Henrik Stenson, who's played very little golf. Joachim Niemann, who did really well a couple of weeks ago at the BMW. And it's a bigger price than Billy Horschel. And your friend... Barry Kevin Kisner. Are you still going to be auto betting Kevin Kisner at the US Open, by the way?
It has been auto bet.
It has been, okay.
Yeah, he's playing great. He really was. I mean, last week, whatever, he stalled out. I mean, if I suppose at this stage, I kind of have to just take a punt that doesn't carry on into a second week of stalling out, but. You know, he had a couple of funky days on the greens, one bad day with the driver, and you've got that kind of almost insurmountable gap to DJ, who's playing godlike golf at the moment. So, you know, that supreme level of focus just isn't quite there. You know, you're a couple of percent off and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, let's just see how he goes when we get back to a level playing field, a level starting field. You know, most of his game is in good shape. I have a little bit of fear about the length of Winged Foot and whether it will be playing soft or running a bit. I think a little bit of run in the fairways really will help him just get that distance so he's not hitting in, you know, a few 200-yard plus approach shots on par fours.
Yeah. I'm going to go full disclosure here. We are going to pull together a US Open preview podcast at the end of this week. I know that you listeners love the ability to digest that kind of information at the end of the week prior to and the weekend prior to the major. So we're going to do that together. Barry's in, Paul's in. I'm going to go full disclosure on my US Open bets that I've already made, and I only made them within the last week. The first bet I made, which was a complete and utter mistake, and I would say to everybody to completely disregard this bet, is Webb Simpson. I backed him all on the exchange at 34. I must have got out of bed. I don't know. Something went horribly wrong with that particular bet. Webb Simpson. So do not back Webb Simpson. Okay. He will clearly win now. But anyway, I don't care because I've backed him. Next up, I backed this particular individual first thing on Sunday. I've gone for Xander Schauffele. I've got him at 22 on the exchange. And I've literally, Paul, just made another bet while you were talking earlier.
You can't keep up.
I can multitask. I can present a show and bet at the same time.
Don't tell your wife.
I'm not going to. I've just backed Patrick Reed, who is 55 on the exchange right now.
Yeah, that's his price.
And that... Here you go, you just said it. That is Patrick Reed's price, isn't it? Mm. He was super, super impressive last week. He was doing things that Patrick Reed doesn't usually do. Shot 11 under. Well, that's his overall score. I don't know what his actual score was. He topped driving accuracy.
Yeah, and this was what's been missing from Patrick Reed's game over the last few months. He's been all over putting. The place. Yeah, the putting has been exceptional, but he's been hitting no fairways and no greens, and when you start to see that wash through and filter through into his stats, then yeah, it's going to make a hell of a difference to how he can approach next week and potentially what he can achieve.
Don't forget as well, Paul, last few times we've been to America, to the Big Apple, he won the Northern Trust, didn't he, last year at Liberty National opposite Manhattan.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, he won at Bethpage Black, the famous US Open PGA Championship venue. So give him a tough golf course.
Yeah.
Loves it. So I'm on Patrick Reed.
Indeed. Yeah, no, I can see the logic in that very much so.
Right, you managed to release your Portugal Masters preview yesterday, and we had to wait for mine. So to give me a break for 15 minutes, because this morning's been rather hectic, do you want to take the listeners and ourselves through your Portugal Masters thoughts, please, Paul?
Yeah, give you a break. This should give the players a little bit of a break who attended last week at Valderrama. It should be a wholly different task this week as we head to the second part of our Iberian swing and heading back to Vilamoura once again, and as you say, for the Portugal Masters. Mm. Tommy Fleetwood was a late addition to the field, which I mentioned to you through gritted teeth yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how the circumstances were from Tommy suddenly appearing on the attendee list midway through Monday morning. But there you go, that's where he is. It completely ripped up the books that had already been early published, because clearly someone like Tommy Fleetwood arriving and playing an event that's otherwise run-of-the-mill European tour at best is going to have a profound impact on the market. And he was instantly put in as 11-2 favourite for this. Not been playing the best, Tommy, is he? He's been playing mainly over on the...
it's his irons, isn't it?
Yeah. It's some very...
Been driving the ball long and straight, but it's the approach play where he's been lacking over in PGA. I just think this whole COVID thing, it affects players in different ways, and he hasn't been comfortable with it at all.
No.
And he's a family man.
Well, he is, and it's an odd warm-up for the US Open to fly to Portugal to then fly back over to the States in time for next week. It's all very strange, but that's where we are. It took me by surprise. I think it took the bookies by surprise and took everyone who comments and looks at these things by surprise. But there you go. That's where we are.
The thing is, Paul, though, do you fly from the UK to California, play a tournament on a golf course you've never played before, and then fly the 5-6 hours back to the East Coast, or do you just go to Portugal and then do the 5-hour flight across to Manhattan? I don't know. They've clearly worked it through that way.
Yeah. It's clearly part of his master plan. We shall see how that transpires. But yes, he's in as the 11-2 favourite this week. George Casillas, 16-1, is the second favourite. He's coming here off the back of form on the Sunshine Tour of second and first. So clearly comes in with a little bit of form. 16-1, George Casillas just doesn't. Is the kind of...
That's never going to float your boat.
No. The kind of number that I'm struggling with a little bit. Haltom Lake, 25-1. It only lasted, 4 or 5 holes last week, Haltom Lake. Before drifting, before withdrawing, so something wasn't quite right. There was a hint. I didn't see anything confirmed. There was a hint of an injury with Lee last week. We'll have to see how that transpires. Ryan Fox, 25-1, and then into the likes of Jorge Campillo, Joost Luiten, Jason Scrivener, Marcus Kinholt, Wilco, and Nain Arbuck. 28-1, 33-1 bar those players that I've mentioned already. So Tommy's appearance has pretty much blown that field further down the... Basically, every player got lengthened as a result of his appearance, which is something you don't see very often with a Monday morning book where it's normally just a sea of blue. It's good to see. And good to see Tommy, see how he fares this week at Vilamoura.
What do you think players need around here, Paul?
What do they need?
Yeah.
It's going to be in stark contrast to last week. That's the fundamental point. And you're going to need to be scoring far more freely and being far more aggressive than you would even dream of being around Valderrama. And that's the key with it, really. It's a relatively short course. the Don Pedro Victoria. It's an Arnold Palmer design. 7,191 par yard, par 71. Bermuda rough, bent power greens. But it's pretty flat. Water on seven of the holes. They did tighten it up a little, actually, before the last year's event. But it still produced a 17-under winning total. So clearly it wasn't that tight. The idea was to try and stop some of the longer players from simply cutting the corners on a lot of the holes.
Right.
So some trees have been planted and some of the sight lines have changed slightly to try and prevent that kind of approach. But I don't think chopping a winning total down from 22 to 17 has moved it in terms of its category. It's still a resort course in my view, and making birdies still the order of the day in terms of how you're going to actually compile a winning score around it. Now, going back through the last few winners, back to 2010, Richard Green 50-1 back in 2010. Tom Lewis won the first of his two titles in 2011, 100-1. Shane Lowry 66s. David Lim 80-1. Alex Levy 70-1. If you're looking for a typical aggressive style player who you'd think would suit somewhere like Villamora, Alex Levy is the archetypal player for this kind of track. Andy Sullivan 50-1, Patrick Harrington 100-1, Lucas Berrigard, who we were on in 2017, 66. Tom Lewis again in 2018 at 50-1, Stephen Brown last year at 150-1, which is the biggest price of those players that we've gone through. The observant amongst you will notice that there were no winners there with a price of less than 50-1. It's one of these resort tracks, and you often see it over on the PGA Tour as well, where low scoring events will often produce a bigger priced player who can simply get the putter going, really get the putter going over the course of the 4 days and make those copious amount of birdies that need to be made to get over the line. And that's the key, really, I think. The last five winning scores, 23, 23, 20, 22, and then 17 under par from the last five events held here. And these are the putting average positions of those, well, the last eight winners here. First, seventh, first, fourth, first, first, fifth, first for putting. You need a hot putter. You need to make some birdies. You need to score well on the par fours. And it does set up well for the long hitters. And I'm sure if you read a number of previews, I'm sure if you listen to a number of commentators and podcasts on this event this week, then a lot of people will emphasise the requirement, the need, the bias towards longer hitters. But then you've got the likes of Richard Green, you've got the likes of Stephen Brown even, who aren't long hitters by any stretch of the imagination. David Lynn, you know, these are kind of middle hitters at the very best. So clearly it's not the be-all and end-all here to be able to hit it a long way. I think you're just going to have to come in and putt particularly well over the course of the 4 days. Course form's positive. Current form coming in positive as well if you look at the previous winners. Although, again, you've got the likes of Alex Levy and Tom Lewis the first time round, who were debutants when they won. So, again, it's not the be-all and end-all. Just go out there, make some birdies, putt well in the week, set up lots of opportunities with some good iron play, and away you go, in my view. I've backed four in total this week. Top of the shop, Guido Migliozzi, the talented Italian at 50-1. I looked through the top of the market, and I can't have Tommy at 11-2. I mean, it's a win only kind of all eggs in one basket bet if you're going to play that one. He's not been playing great. He's had five attempts here at Villamora, no top tens over the course of those five events. So that's enough to put me off Tommy. George Gutsaya, as I said, he's finished 2-1, second first on the Sunshine Tour over the last couple of weeks. But when it gets to the business end of these European Tour events, and it's like hot potato at the best of times, let alone when you've got George Gutsaya involved, 16-1. I'd be struggling to put him up at 50-1, 66, simply because I have very little faith that when it comes, push comes to shove, that he can actually convert.
No. He is the right kind. He loves these low-scoring 20-under jobs, doesn't he? But the guy, just his record of converting anything over Sunshine Tour is pathetic.
It's a stack of opportunities and just hasn't happened. So, I mean, the closest to the guys at the top for me was Ryan Fox, who's been playing some good, consistent stuff. But again, he's not really been getting that close to winning. So I've gone followed this trend for 50-1 and above winners here. I can't ignore it. It's staring you in the face over the last 10 years. So, yeah, as I say, I've gone for Guido at the top of my list this week. He bounced back to form last week, finished sixth in the Valderrama after what was essentially a poor UK swing. Massive improvement that. He'd finished twice he'd played Valderrama before, two missed cuts. Now, this is a big change of pace, I understand that. And I'm not sure you're going to be able to directly correlate any form from Valderrama to Villamora because they're two very, very, very different tests. However, a player who finds a bit of form, particularly with a putter, either that or with his approach play and coming into an event where it's going to be far, far simpler and far easier to play some golf, I think it kind of feel like a weight's been lifted off their shoulder and really go out and play well. He topped putting last week. He made 100 putts for the week, which is the best on show. He led the par four scoring for the week for all of the players at Valderrama last week. And again, par four scoring here from the last few winners has been absolutely critical. So if you can make that a quick adjustment, he could go really well here, I think. A couple of wins on the European Tour already. 14th here last year. He was 5th for strokes gained approach, 6th for strokes gained tee to green, which was really positive last year here for Guido. And backing Guido up, I've got Antoine Rosner. I've backed a number of times. You've noticed that a lot of the players that I've backed since the resumption of golf have gone on to win or gone on to really contend in the weeks that I've decided to drop them. So I'm going to stick with Rosner. I've been chasing my tail a bit with him, I must say, but I'm convinced that he's got a win in him and he's got a win in him soon. So let's stick with him. He backdoored a third place finish last week. He closed with 17, which was only beaten by 3 players. Should give him lots of confidence coming into this week. His putting was positive, but it was also first strokes gained approach, which, again, if you're going to be setting up a lot of birdie opportunities this week, if your approach play is good, if your putting is good, then that could easily translate into a lot of birdie chances and birdies made this week on a track where you're going to need to do that, I think. 2 wins on the Challenge Tour. He won those by an aggregate 11 shots. He can go low. He can produce the kind of scoring that you need to do around here, and he's proven that he can win. And I think there's a lot of players in this field that you could argue aren't going to be able to do that. I've not got the recent enough winning mentality to go and to convert an opportunity. I think he's ripe and he's close for me. It is his debut here, but he has played in Portugal before. He finished 2nd at the Open to Portugal back in 2018 on the Challenge Tour. So a little bit of positive Portuguese form to go with it as well.
Paul, can I just ask you a question?
Yeah, go on.
How does an Antoine Rosner compare to, say, a Benjamin Hébert in terms of his game shape? You know, if we're comparing two young, talented Frenchmen. I haven't seen a lot of Rosner. I know he's very well thought of.
Yeah, he is. He's more of an accurate type, in my view. Hébert's got a lot of game, but he's another one of these who just struggles to convert, isn't he?
Yes.
Rosner, he's more of an accurate type. But clearly what I saw last week with the putter was the kind of catalyst for me to get involved again. And it doesn't take much for me to get involved with him because I think I've backed him 3 or 4 times over the last
Well, he's well thought after, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's a big prospect in my view, and I think he's one that you've got to keep.
Has it been the putter that's been holding him back of late until he kind of turned that last week?
He seems a bit hot and cold with it. His long game seems to be quite consistent. His putter can be hot and cold, but I think he was 8th for putts per GIR in old money last week, which is good enough for me with a player who can hit a lot of fairways. And clearly, they're all going to hit a lot more greens this time. Last week was more about, you know, hit as many greens as you possibly can, but you're still going to be hitting 40, 50, you know, anything approaching 60% last week was,
amazing.
Was outstanding. So you translate that to a track that this week is going to be far easier to find greens. And the fact that it was first strokes gained approach and putting well when he turns up to a track like this should be far more up his alley, I think. So yeah, got high hopes with Rosner this week and in general for the Frenchman. A couple of longer shots to complete. Alvaro Quiros at 100-1. A bit more speculative, as you know, because he's that kind of player who misses an awful lot of cuts. But a few signs last week that there's a reason to back him, I think. You know, on a practical level, he knows the track here at Villamora better than most. He lived very locally for a while just after he got married, back in 2013 or so. He was attached to the course back in the day as well. So he's played the course an awful lot. He won here in 2008, and we've seen with Tom Lewis that repeat winners on this track are possible. And we've also seen with the likes of Robert Carlson, Frankie Molinari, Justin Walters, who've all finished runner-up more than once here, that you've got players who get on with the track and come back and compete and contend time after time. Andy Sullivan's another one who's got a great record here. But Quiros, he's had some wrist injuries, as we know. He struggled a bit. He was up to 21st in the world at one point in 2011 after he won six European Tour events in pretty quick succession. But right off the boil with his injuries. But did win that Rocco Forte Open back in 2017. And that was off the back of one snippet of form the previous week. He finished 22nd. And you had to really, you know, if you blink and you missed it with Quiros.
What was that? What did he win? Was that one where he won at 250-1?
Yeah, it was a mad price. Yeah, it was a mad price. But he had finished 22nd the week before. And there was clearly a massive improvement over the, you know, bad missed cuts he's been making. So the fact he finished 17th last week at Valderrama, which he has got some local ties to Valderrama, I'd still say it's nothing like the kind of track where you should be seeing someone like Alvaro Quiros doing well. So top 20 at Valderrama, and he comes to a track where he's lived very locally, he's played it a copious amount of times, he's won in the past, he's 100-1. I can ignore him. There was no reason for me to miss Alvaro Quiros off the list this week, and he could just go and win it. He's that kind of player who could just turn this week and win this golf tour. 100-1. So that's Quiros. Finally, I've gone with Robin C.O. Sigrist. Again, another player that I've backed relatively recently. I backed him at the Austrian Open, actually. He missed the cut. And naturally finished third the week after the Euro and Bank Open when I dropped him. So he's another player who's a little bit hit and miss, but he's learning his trade at this level. Third there, third at the Vic Open before lockdown, eighth at Mauritius at the back end of last year. So three good top 10 finishes in this European Tour wraparound season. He putts well, he drives the ball well. He would seem to be quite well suited to Villamora for me. He can score well. He shot a 61 in that effort at the Euro Bank Open as well. And he's another one who showed a bit of form last week, 17th again last week at Valderrama. 200-1, quite happy to take a chance with him. With the extended places that are on offer this week. So that's my four in reverse order. Robin, C.O. Sigrist, Alvaro Quiros, Antoine Rosner, and top of the shop was Guido Migliozzi.
I think your event's very similar to mine in many ways, especially that winning prize. Yeah, it'd be very, very easy to get sucked into some of these shorter prices this week and just, you know, Ryan Fox type or the Joost Luiten or someone. But actually, year in, year out, it's someone at that juicy 50-1 mid price or bigger that gets the job done around there.
Yeah, and they're the kind of events that punters love to get involved in, the kind of events that I love to get involved in as well. And was there anyone you fancied in that, Barry? I know you've had a brief look at the Portugal Masters.
So, so brief.
Just in the garden, just then.
I don't know if I've kind of. I'm slightly out of rhythm.
You said to me that you were giving up with the European Tour. Is that going to be
not giving up. Let's just put it this way. We're both dancing at the moment, but probably not to the same song. So we're a little bit out of rhythm. We're not really getting the desired results. I don't know. I like what you're saying about Rosner, particularly with the approach I'm putting. It's whether he can back up one hot week with another. There's a lot of guys there kind of looking at the form versus course history that have some, you know, plenty of green on the board on the combi stats breakdown on the golf betting system website. And so that's kind of making it tricky for me to identify one in particular. I'm kind of backseating myself a little bit for maybe this week, just take a breath before the US Open.
No, absolutely. As in this game, if nothing, there's no point having a bet just for the sake of it and any of this stuff. If you fancy someone, go for it. If you're trying to pluck someone out for the to have some interest, then it's probably just going to backfire.
It's usually where you lose money pretty quickly. So,
To your point about Rosner in terms of his potentially keeping going for two consecutive weeks, when he won his Challenge Tour events last year, they were both week after week. They were two consecutive weeks. So he's that kind of player, I think, when he finds that top gear, he's going to be able to really maintain it and keep at that level for a week or two longer. So hopefully he's one of those guys who can get himself right in the mix this week. We shall see.
That's good to know. I think.
Can you believe, chaps, that the new PGA Tour season is just starting 3 days after the old one?
You didn't have much of a rest there, Steve.
I'm looking forward to the first FedEx Cup standings update in the middle of the tournament.
What do you mean? Middle of round one?
Oh, that's it. Yeah, yeah. With this putt, he'll move to number one in the FedEx Cup standings.
This guy's projected P1.
Do you know what was really weird? Like, FedEx pumped so much money into, obviously, the FedEx Cup. There was so little talk about the financial amounts the guys were winning and losing yesterday.
No, they just mentioned charity. That's what they tend to mention. I don't know if you noticed.
Oh, it's such a big narrative. Avoiding the guys getting the big
that
money.
Putt's just cost him $2.5 million.
I want to see that as a fan, and I want the camera zoomed in his face as a putt for he misses a 5-6 footer and makes a 5-6 footer for that's worth $500,000. But
you got a sadistic streak there, Barry.
I'm a sports fan, and the whole idea is they put this, what was it, $45 million they put up for reward money in this in this tournament. That needs to be spoken about. They're trying to make the guys uncomfortable by putting up these big numbers of money. $15 million to win. They're trying to make them uncomfortable, and yet they completely forget to talk about it, or they purposely don't talk about it because they're afraid of a tiny bit of bad media that these golfers are getting paid too much, which is, look, they get paid a lot of money because they're excellent at what they do and there's a lot of publicity around it, and FedEx deems it worthwhile to pump that amount of money into the event or, into the year-long thing. So it should be spoken about, just because it might upset one person that somebody's winning $15 million in a tournament.
Shock horror, PGA Tour stars make a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a...
But I totally agree. And I think, there was a lot of debate, and there has been a lot of debate. We even debated it on here last week. Is this strokes index the right way? There's been talk about it. I mean, Jeff Feinberg mentions it a lot over on the stuff that he's doing over in over the other side of the Atlantic. Why don't we do match play? You could do a match play finish to this where, top eight stroke play for the first 2 days, then the top eight go through to match play. And wouldn't it be fantastic coverage where you've literally got a head-to-head 18-hole match play finish for $15 million? But it can't work because the PGA Tour don't want to tell the viewers that the $15 million prize that's out there is actually out there. It's all kind of a dirty little secret.
It doesn't really work, does it? No, the two things don't match up, but they have to match up because the money's there. So you need to talk about it. It needs, and it needs to be focused. And I think match play would be sensational. There's no doubt the two guys in the final match, if they're playing for winner takes 15 and second place gets 5 or whatever, they're definitely making a deal, but they might leave $1 million on the table to play for. So either way,
making a deal.
If you're going into a match play situation and the difference is $10 million, I'm making a deal. Are you making a deal? Yeah,
well, in the locker room.
Absolutely, 100%. You are. You're not playing for straight up for $10 million. I'm not. Let's say maybe some of those guys would, but I think match play would be so much more entertaining. You just get that extra level of tension in match play that just doesn't seem to kind of play out so well in the stroke format they have. I mean, it's a messy system. I mean, I think what they should possibly do is pay out more money for the season long standings instead of this last gasp dash for cash. I don't think there's any perfect solution.
They've not found it yet, have they?
It's a difficult old scenario, and at the end of the day, we are three complete golf nuts who bet on golf pretty much every week of the year. If you ask me questions about who won the 2012 FedEx Cup, I probably couldn't tell you. I'd have to go and look at my records. If you told me who won the majors in 2012, I could drag them up out of my brain. And that's the point, isn't it? People don't remember the FedEx Cup champion. They do remember the major champions.
And I think you might. I mean, if you think back to, say, like the match play, the Dell match play, or whatever it's called these days, you can remember quite a few of those guys that won that event because it's so unique in the calendar. Match play is so unique in the pro calendar. And I think if it was a match play situation for the FedEx Cup, they stick in your mind a bit more because you've watched two guys duel it out for 18 holes directly head-to-head instead of on a scoreboard with other players.
That's true.
Then
I
can
remember Kisner and Bubba winning the last two match plays. I couldn't probably tell you who won the FedEx Cup that year.
No.
I know that Rory won it last year and that DJ won it this year, but I can't really forget yesterday. Anyway, it's the start of a new PGA Tour season. It's the Safeway Open. I believe there's 50 events this year. So there's not going to be a lot of rest.
cram them in.
Oh, mate. Just to update, the Far East Swing has been cancelled. So the WGC HSBC Champions, which they play in Shanghai, that's now been cancelled until 2021. That's penciled in then. The CJ Cup that they play on Jeju Island, which is a golf tournament I always love, that's been moved to Shadow Creek Golf Course in Las Vegas. And the Zozo Championship, where we saw Tiger Woods win last year, that's been moved from Japan to Sherwood Country Club in California. Now, that's a golf course that I know Dustin Johnson plays a lot because I believe Gretzky's got a property on Sherwood Country Club. And it's also a tournament we used to see regularly at Tiger's Challenge Tournament, or it used to be called the Chevron Challenge.
The season-ending, Johnny.
You got it. I can remember one year G-Max staring down Tiger Woods there. Beating him in the final round. And Zach Johnson won there, I believe, as well. So we've got some Sherwood Country Club angles to look at for that. But that's quite a way down the line. Clearly, this week we've got the Safeway Open. We've also got the US Open next week at Winged Foot. Now, Safeway Open is very similar to your event, Paul, in terms of winning prices, I have to say. I'll start with that. Champ last year won at 150-1. Tway, 66s. Brandon Steele, I mean, this is the Brandon Steele Open. 33-1 when he defended in 17. When he won it the first time in 16, he was 50-1. There needs to be some kind of statue built at Silverado because this is the course where Emiliano Grillo actually won a golf tournament. He won this at 50-1 in 2015. And I think he won that straight off the back of winning the web.com as it was championship the week or 2 weeks before.
Yeah, he was in some decent nick back then.
He actually won tournaments then.
He must have been making some three or four footers as well.
And we have Sangmoo Bay in 2014. Moon Bay won at 150-1. So since we've gone to this split season, the average winning price here is 83-1. And since when we go back to 2010 and include winners from Courdival, which was the course beforehand, so Jimmy Walker, I was on him that year, 30-1, Blixt, Mulder and Rocco Mediate, that average for this tournament is 75-1. And that, to me, helped shape my views on the target areas of pricing I was going for. Because let's be honest here, after 3 weeks of carnival kind of carnival golf on the PGA Tour with the very best players in the world, you can't really say the same this week. When you've got Siwoo Kim and Phil Mickelson as joint favourites, it's a bit of a culture shock. Barry, I bet you'll be backing Siwoo this week at 18-1, won't you?
if he gave me a by 10 multiplier. I mean, come on.
To make the prices even worse, Matt Kuchar was going to be playing this and he's withdrawn.
Yeah, just put another knife into the market.
So we're seeing loads of blue at the top of the market where you had a lot of you saw a lot of pink ball with Fleetwood coming in. We've got Kuchar going out. We've got Kim, Mickelson, Lowry, Joel Damon, his fifth favourite. Jordan Spieth, interesting. Sergio Garcia. We've got Emiliano Grillo. We've got Eric Van Ruin. I'm sure he'll be on everyone's DraftKings team with everyone talking. He's such a fantastic player, this Eric Van Ruin. He's popping lots of models. But we've got Brendan Steele, Harold Varner, Ches Reavie, Doc Redman. That's the top of this week's betting card. So it's a bit of a culture shock, to say the least. Silverado Resort and Spa. It used to be a country club, but it's now a resort and spa. It's an interesting little course, actually. 7,200 yards, played at Napa, which is California. It's clearly Napa is wine country. It's an extremely dry environment. I checked the last 3 months, there's been like 2 millimetres of rain. So this golf course, bearing in mind it's a Johnny Miller owned golf course as well. Miller's got a lot of impact on this golf course and this tournament. Miller doesn't mind a little bit of release on the greens. And we see that in the scoring here. It's never crazy 30 under kind of stuff that we're used to on the PGA Tour. So it's a classical tree line, 7,200 yard par 72. The greens are a mix of bent grass with poana. The greens themselves are 6,000 square feet on average, so kind of run-of-the-mill. Difficulty rank last year, 19 of 41 courses, 71.24. And winning scores around here recently have been Champ 17 under, Tway 14 under, Steele 15 under, Steele 18 under, Griot 15 under. So at that mid-score kind of level, we're not going 23, 25, 28 under like we've seen on a lot of tournaments, because I think the local geography, the local meteor, you know, the local weather and the way that Johnny wants those greens to have a little bit of release, make it a little bit of a truer test, means that the scoring can't be as low. Also, fairways are particularly difficult to hit around. It's always got one of the highest clicks for missed fairways. But that conversely kind of gives us a little bit of a steer as to what kind of player we might be looking for. Because if I look at the winning stats of the champions here, 2014 through 2019, so that's champ through to Bay, since they played at Silverado. And I take the average is of the score stats traditionally. Driving distance 17th, so it's nice to be a long driver around here. Driving accuracy 20th. So that screams total driving from the very outset, long and straight. Now, clearly, Phil Mickelson, I've seen someone on our Facebook group this morning saying that Phil Mickelson at 20-1 is printing money. And that could be the case. But when I checked Phil around here, Phil doesn't like to hit fairways at this golf course. And, you know, historically, you need to be hitting a decent amount of fairways to win here. Greens in regulation 13th, proximity to hole 21st, scrambling, listen to this, scrambling averages out as 4th, putting average 31st. Paul, how many tournaments on the PGA Tour do you see an average winning putting average across 6 winners of 31st in the field?
Yeah, but then going back to the list of names, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? You know,
Steele. Champ. Tway. They're not Phil Mickelson or Branch Snedeker on the greens, are they?
Yeah. Emiliano Grillo. I mean, these guys don't putt well. That's a fact. So that kind of steers you in a different direction as to the kind of player that you think could go well here.
And that is kind of backed up by strokes gained across last four winners. Champ through steel twice again. Strokes gained off the tee, on average, for those four winners, 10th. So good, powerful drivers. Strokes gained on approach, 12th. So a decent standard, but not as accurate as we have seen in recent weeks. Strokes gained around the green, 28th.
Yeah.
Strokes gained tee to green, 4th. And then strokes gained putting, again, a really high number, 20th.
Mm.
I mean, Cameron Champ, 28th to strokes gained putting last year. Brendan Steele in 2017 was 29th. So that must have been kind of almost like average, neutral.
Yeah.
So it says to me, longer sorts who can hit the ball a fairly long way. There's a lot of long par fours around here. There are also a number of holes here where if you can be really aggressive off the tee, kind of Bryson DeChambeau kind of styly, you can virtually have a chip to the just a chip up the green.
Yeah.
With your second. I've noted the 5th, the 8th, the 9th, the 16th and the 18th, where going for the green becomes a real factor. Someone that can hit the ball a long distance and get it in a prime position, then just to either go for the par 5s in 2 or to make a shorter par 4 a scorable par 4.
Yeah. It kind of bears out your total driving point. It's if you can hit it in the fairway, a long way down, you're going to give yourself a lot of chances on these par fives. If that's where the bulk of the scoring is done, then they're the target and the key holes in terms of actually getting yourself to compile a decent score.
The other thing I've noted with PGA Tour events the first event after the Tour Championship. So last year we had the Greenbrier actually, and that was won by the Wunderkind Neiman at 28-1. But he'd shown some very nice rounds throughout the playoffs. You know, there was a round, I think he shot a 65 at the BMW, the outing before, which was good enough for second in the field. He'd been, showing some real spark. Kevin Tway had done the same. He'd only finished 43rd at the Dell Technologies, but that contained one good round, which was in the top 10 for the field. The outing before that, he was actually 6th after 36 holes at the Northern Trust. Bearing in mind that those are huge events for a player of Tway's or Neiman's. Now, you're playing with the very best of the best. It's like a major, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there's something in there as well. And even Brendan Steele in 2017, he'd been 7th after 36 holes at the BMW Championship the outing before. So there's something in there about players that have shown just a little bit of spark, a little bit of guts, a little bit of, well, actually, I can mix it with some of the best players in the world in the playoffs. And then they come to the Safeway Open or whatever the opening event of the next season is and say, well, actually, this field is no FedEx Cup event. If I can keep my game going nicely, I can actually get a victory here. And, the likes of Kevin Tway, the likes of Emiliano Grillo, the likes of Jimmy Walker going back to 2013... And, Joachim Niemann last year, he won the first event. I know it was the Greenbrier, but that was his first ever tour win. You do get a lot of tour maidens winning their first events in an event like this. And that's kind of where I'm at. I wouldn't say I've ignored it deliberately, but, it's easy to make a case for someone like a Siwoo Kim. Although I would personally never back Siwoo Kim on anything bar Bermuda. I mean, we saw that at the Wyndham where he could have won a few weeks ago. I wouldn't back Phil Mickelson at 20-1 here. I think of the top guys, he would have been the most likely, and I did kind of think about putting him up. Shane Lowry at 25s, well, yes, he's a good player. Is he really going to be thinking about this week, or is he thinking about his long flight to the US Open next week at New York? Joel Damon at 30-1. You've got Joel Damon there. I mean, he's a guy that put out on Twitter the other week that he doesn't care if he never wins a tournament on the PGA Tour. He's just happy soaking up lots of cash. Is that the kind of mindset you want on a 30-1 shot?
A career journeyman, yeah.
And then you've got the enigma that is Jordan Spieth. Who'd have thought a few years ago that Jordan Spieth would be 30-1?
In this field.
fifth favourite or sixth favourite in this field. In the, would he ever? He would never even have played the Safeway Open, would he? But clearly, you know, him and Mickelson and Lowry and Tommy Fleetwood, these are guys that have missed the FedEx Cup playoffs and they need to play an event before the US Open. Yeah. Same with Sergio Garcia. That takes me down the betting market. I've gone past Brandon Steele. And I've gone to Harold Varner III. He's another one of these Tony Finau types, isn't he? He's got so many supporters, Harold Varner III. And he's had so many false dawns in the past. But do you know what? I just couldn't avoid him. I've managed to get on the board at 33-1, the eight places with Paddy Power. And you just look at the way that he's played of late. You know, even coming back from the redemption, you know, the resumption of COVID, back at the Charles Schwab Challenge. I don't know if you can cast your mind back to June, but he was leading that event after 36 holes at Colonial.
Yeah.
And that tournament was absolutely loaded. He showed nicely at the PGA Championship a few weeks ago, which they played at San Francisco, which is no more than 100 miles away here from Napa. He landed 29th in the end, which is his best ever major finish. And then buoyed by that, he flew to the Wyndham Championship in Greensboro, the last of the regular season, and he shot 8 under 62 to be a first round leader, par leader at 80-1. And then instead of just disappearing, and we've seen Harold Varner do something like that, and next thing you know, he's shooting 8 over par the next day and missing the cut or down in last place making the cut. He actually kept the round to go the weekend together. He shot 69 on the Friday, 67 on the Saturday. He was still in the top 10. And he shot a 65 5 under on the final Sunday to finish 7th. And you just think, you know, that's someone that might be getting comfortable to the heat of Sunday pressure and getting his head around the fact that he's an absolutely fantastic golfer. These full season numbers actually shocked me, Paul. 17th for strokes gained off. This is a season stat on the PGA Tour, the very cream of golf across the planet. He's 17th for strokes gained off the tee, 15th for total driving, 8th for strokes gained tee to green, and 8th for ball striking.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Top 10 on the PGA Tour for tee to green. He's elite, isn't he? Apart from the fact that he struggles on the greens and he struggles with the sort of grey matter between the ears at points. But there's the absolutely perfect golfer for Silverado this week. Perfect golfer.
No, I can see that. I can see the logic.
33-1 kind of fits in that bracket that we're looking for. Tour maiden, would not be surprised. And he's got, I think it's 4 top 20s at this place. He's played here 6 consecutive years, plays it every year, and always gets a reasonable finish here. Next up for me, someone that really did shock the golfing world a few weeks ago. It certainly shocked me when I was having my Weetabix on Saturday morning and saw that Cameron Davis was virtually co-leading the Northern Trust at TPC Boston. Talented Australian. He was in second spot, tied with Scotty Scheffler after 2 rounds at that Northern Trust. But actually, we've mentioned Davis in the past. I know he's not new to listeners. He's been tipped up recently, quite rightly so. His all-round game is excellent. He ranked 22nd for ball striking and 31st for total driving last season. Again, great numbers. He's 308 yards off the tee. He's in the top 20 for driving distance on the PGA Tour, and he's a pure ball striker. Across my 8-week trackers for this particular tournament, 9th for greens and regs, 7th for strokes gained off the tee, 18th for strokes gained on approach, and 11th for strokes gained tee to green. Shock and horror, he also ranks first on my 8-week trackers in this field for strokes gained putting. So someone that's long, aggressive, brilliant ball striking, and the putter's been working recently. Yeah, just sign him up, really. Whether he's got the experience and whether he's got the wherewithal to actually get over the finishing line on a Sunday, yet to be seen. But I could certainly see a scenario where Davis is teeing up in the last few groups on Sunday around here.
You got to give him the benefit of the doubt until proven otherwise, and we'll see how he fares should he get himself in that spot.
I tipped him up 2 years ago here, and he actually finished with a 4 under 68. He finished 17th. He actually finished that year. This is how anal my mind works. He actually finished tied 17th with one Cameron Champ that week. And then the week after, I tipped up Cameron Davis, didn't tip up Cameron Champ, and Cameron Champ went and won the Sanderson Farms the week after. Cameron Davis didn't. But good player, Davis. A 2017 Australian Open winner, where he beat Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, and Cameron Smith. So he's no mug. So I've gone Davis at 40s. I've got Harold Varner III at 33s. And then I'll mention my 50-1 shot. And before I get to my next two after that, I'll bring you guys in. Next up, player that we're all aware of, a great driver of the ball, very long off the tee, an exceptional young talent. He's only 24. I remember him very, very clearly when he went head-to-head in a round at the 2018 Honda Classic with Tiger Woods and beat him. Sam Burns. He's 50-1, 8 places each way at Boyle Sports. Across my 8-week trackers, he's first for strokes gained off the tee in this field, 17th for strokes gained tee to green, 12th for strokes gained total. And I can remember him a few 6-8 weeks ago, Workday Charity Open. That was the event that Colin Morikawa won in that crazy finish with Justin Thomas at Memorial Village. And 36 holes and 54 holes, Sam Burns was in fourth spot that week, mixing it with some of the very best players on the PGA Tour. Finished like a train a few weeks ago at the Wyndham Championship, where he finished 13th with weekend rounds of 65 Saturday, 65 Sunday. He just seems to be putting well. And on the Corn Ferry a few years ago, 2018, he finished third at the Utah Championship. So in neighbouring Utah, third in the 2018 Utah Championship. That was an event won by tournament winner last year here, Cameron Champ. So that's another link in for Sam Burns, who I think is on many maidens' list of talented players that could be winning soon on the PGA Tour. So that's three for me so far. I've got Varner, Davis and Burns. Paul, I know you haven't had much time. I know that Barry's had even less. Is there anyone that you're backing at the Safeway Open this week?
Yeah, I've backed one. I'm going to back another. And another one, just as you've been talking, I'm pondering. And that the one I'm pondering is Sergio Garcia. And the reason for that is his form hasn't been great, and his price relative to what I perceive to be his quality in this field is quite attractive. I mean, he's available around the 28-30-1 mark. I think he's a bit better than that, Sergio. He hasn't played the track, I understand that. But if you look at his total driving over his last few starts, St. Jude WGC level, 7th there for total driving, Wyndham Championship, 9th there for total driving. So clearly that aspect of his game, which could be pretty pivotal this week, is working well. I remember putting up Sergio at the Earth course last year after the back of some poor form, and kind of overlooking the fact that he hadn't been playing great, and simply taking the fact that he's better than the price suggested. And he finished sixth that week. He produced an each way payout for us, and I've got a feeling he might be in that kind of bracket here this week. I haven't backed him. I'm going to need to give it a little bit more thought, but he's one for my thought process list. The one I have backed is Tyler Duncan, 66-1. He got his breakthrough win in the effectively the full series segment of the PGA Tour last year, the RSM Classic. He's shown some flashes of form lately, 13th for the Wyndham, four rounds there in the 60s, 29th for the Northern Trust, 48th for the BMW, second after the first day, and closed with the 68th for a bit of momentum, fifth for total driving that week. So again, if that is one of the key stats this week, then potentially one to look at. Fifth here in 2017 on his debut, and he led that year for the first three rounds. He just came out and stuck right at the business end. But he's better now. He's got a PGA Tour win under his belt since that point. Clearly more experienced. And I think he's in some sneakily good form, really. And again, fits in that kind of price bracket that you were talking about earlier. So Tyler Duncan, yeah, for me, 66-1. And of course, Matt Every's in the field, so I'll be playing him first round leader.
I did have a good look at Duncan. Because he's another one that he was showing up in a few in one of those playoff events.
Yeah, the BMW, yeah. Second after the first day. So, as I say, close with the 68 as well, which in the context of that event was a pretty strong round. So, yeah, some decent enough form from Duncan. And, clearly a PGA Tour winner now to boot, which has got to give him some decent stead. And, of course, that he's come back to having performed here well in the past.
Anyone caught your eye, Barry?
Just one so far. Big fan of Harald Varner. I'd 33-1 is just mean, I'll see. Just one that kind of caught my eye is Mark Hubbard.
Yeah,
he's the 13th here last year. Had an okay run of recent results. Went to university in San Jose, so not even an hour away from the golf course. So I don't know if he's ever played before, but he's kind of, back to a territory he was, back to an area of the country he spent a bit of time in. And he seems to, his results seem to pop a little better on tree lined courses. So, tied 12th at the Rocket Mortgage, tied 15th at the Wyndham Championships, since those were back in May and just last month. So, back to him. Other than that, I am lacking in study. So the Monday finish has kind of thrown me off kilter for the week.
I think it's thrown everyone off kilter.
Yeah.
Hubbard actually threw in a 69 at the BMW Championship a few weeks ago. He was 26th after 54 holes. And that is the kind of player we want. Absolutely. I think he was from, I think he grew up in Colorado as well. So he's from this kind of part of the world.
Yeah.
I can see Hubbard. I do like Hubbard. That's a decent out, that is. I like that. Two more from me. I'm following this angle of good drivers and someone that's shown some real quality at, probably better than their rank in the PGA Tour. Over the FedEx Cup. One was Harry Higgs, who had an outstanding outing at the Northern Trust, where I think he was in the top. I think he finished 11th in the end, but he was right in the mix come Sunday, Harry Higgs. Yeah. And one thing we've learnt about him, he's a very, very strong driver of the golf ball. And he's actually got some good results on this kind of agronomy. I'll tell you what I found. We've got the Bent Poa mixed greens. We've also got Bermuda grass fairways, which I found that's kind of weird for California. But with the heat here and the lack of water, I can see it. And it was verified by the course superintendent. So they actually play a mix of Bermuda grass and some ryegrass on the fairways. But Harry Higgs, second in Kansas, 11th in Utah, third in Colorado, 11th in Idaho, and he won the Price Cutter Championship on the Corn Ferry in Missouri. So this kind of agronomy with the Ben and the Poa, that works for Higgs, who actually grew up in New Jersey, and he's based down in Dallas, Texas. So that kind of Poano and that bent grass, that would have been just agronomy and grasses and bluegrass that he's been playing since he was a youngster. But yeah, powerful driver, 300 yards he averages off the tee. Again, top 40 for strokes gained off the tee and top 30 for total driving this season. I just thought Higgs is another one that kind of put his hand up to be back this week at 80-1. And finally, a player that I know that you've mentioned quite a lot in the past, recent past, Paul, is Robbie Shelton.
Mm.
I've got him at 90-1 with Betfred, seven places at the time. He shot a final round 66 at the Northern Trust, which included the last six holes at 6 under. for 13th spot, and that actually boosted his FedEx Cup rank, and he got on the TV where he made the bubble and got it into the BMW Championship.
Yeah.
And for any rookie, I know that we've been spoilt with Scotty Scheffler and the likes of Scotty Scheffler and Sung Jae-im recently, where they've kind of come on as rookies and just devastated everything. But for a rookie to hit the PGA Tour and actually make the top 70 is some accomplishment, I think, in a kind of normal golfing world. Seventh at the Greenbrier last year, which was his first ever PGA Tour event as a rookie. Sixth at the Mayakoba, 11th in Honda, and then he was third at the 3M Open in late July. That was the tournament that Michael Thompson won. So he clearly got his head around the fact that he can mix it at PGA Tour level in fields that aren't hugely full of quality. His two wins on the Corn Ferry in 2019 came at 15 under, and they were both on bent grass greens, so like that. And actually, he was 10th there after 36 holes last year. And his numbers recently have been spectacular in this field. 7th for strokes gained tee to green over the last 8 weeks. And 6th for strokes gained total. Top 25, both for off the tee and approach. So there hasn't been a lot of weakness in Shelton's game recently. He's been very, very good from tee to green and with a putter. So he was the last one in at 90-1. So Shelton at 90s. Higgs at 80s, Burns at 50s, Davis 40s, and Harold Varn III. I've been sucked into HV3 at 33-1 this week. Those are the five I am backing at the Safeway Open.
Interesting to see how Shelton finishes if he is in position, because those final rounds that he's been producing, as you say, 63 at the Northern Trust and 64 at 3M. That's the kind of number you want to see of a player who gets himself into the mix, or to produce when he's in the mix. So.
Yeah, and you also get a mix here. Great point, Paul. I mean, Champ was three ahead going into the final round here last year, but Tway's been three back. Brendan Steele was four back a few years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is it. Not, you know, we were talking about Ryan Palmer earlier. If you can get a player that can actually think, well, I'm not going to win this, and then shoot a crazy 64 or 65 on the Sunday, that's very much on
here. Sit in the hutch and wait. Yeah.
Yeah, very much on here. Definitely. But you could look at it the other way, and Phil Mickelson's the best 20-1 bet you've ever had in your life.
Plenty of money.
That's what Roy's saying on the Facebook group, and he probably is right.
Yeah. We'll see.
Okay, that's the show. We're done and dusted. Anything to add?
No, good. Best of luck, chaps.
Place winning bets only.
Yeah, it'd be nice, man.
Exactly. Yeah, it's this is like the soft start, isn't it? It's a weird, because like next week we're straight into a major, whereas usually this time of year we've got a run of these like events where all the big boys take time off, and they're all just taking a week off and I guess getting a practice round or two in and winged foot, and
it's when you go to your favourite Italian restaurant, Barry, and they're just dishing up the dough balls to start.
Yeah, nothing wrong with dough balls, but you know there's something better to come. Yeah,
but you know there's another Peroni, and you know that there's a nice meal to come.
I take it you're talking about the Open to Portugal you're looking forward to next week,
oh, mate. Good luck, mate.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for listening. That was the Golf Betting System podcast for this week. We'll be back later this week for our US Open Winged Foot Research Pod. So we look forward to seeing you there. Goodbye.